Buddy, I'm Beattie Cohn-Vredos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth, my friends? We certainly all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. It doesn't matter whether or not you're a Beatle, or whether or not you're rich or poor, whether or not you've gone to Harvard or a community college. We all are having a lot of challenges these days. Navigating at times this very crazy, chaotic world of ours. And yet, the good news is whether or not you may be suffering from depression or anxiety, as the Beatles tell us, the very, very best thing that we can all do when we find that we are on a roller coaster ride or a merry-go-round ride, and not a fun merry-go-round ride, is to give ourselves permission to reach out and ask for help. And I can tell you, you don't need to be in therapy or counseling for 1,000 years, but sometimes just getting a second opinion, a new perspective, a way for you to emotionally work through your issues, whether or not they're issues from your past, from your family of origin, or whether or not you may be struggling with things that are going on or not going on today, it makes all the difference in the world. And you know, when I was looking at some of the depression statistics as an example, you know that in the United States, and this may be a surprise to some of you, there are about 16 million adults in the United States who are suffering from true clinical depression. And that number rises to 350 million people worldwide. That is a lot of people. And when you're looking at the issues of anxiety disorders, anxiety is now taken on the number one mental health issue in this country. 40 million adults in the United States are suffering from various different kinds of anxiety disorders. But you don't need to navigate your travels by yourself. And of course, as I tell you every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show, you are always welcome to call in live. The number is 888-874-4888. So don't be shy, because I know that you're texting me and emailing me. And sometimes you're saying, but I'm just a little bit uncomfortable to call you on the show. Well, if you pick up your phone right now, we can pretend that we are just having a tete-a-tete between you and me. Or what if you are finding that you are either drinking too much, or you're taking too many prescription and over-the-counter medications, and you have to ask yourself, what is that all about? You know that you are out of control, and you've tried to stop, and yet you have to ask, what is it? What is it? And why is it that you are trying to numb yourself with alcohol or with pills or with a variety of other different kinds of drugs? And again, this will always, always interfere with the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships, as you well know. So again, if you are feeling out of control, the very best thing that you really can do is reach out and ask for help. And what about sex? Well, we're not doing all that well in the United States when it comes to sex. There was a study, and this was a study done with 100 couples, married couples, who defined their marriages as either happy or very happy. So one would expect, right, that with happy and very happily married people, that they would probably have a pretty good sex life. Well, this is not at all what the study found. In fact, what the research did find was that 50% of these very happy and happily married women had difficulty becoming aroused. An additional 35% of the happy and very happily married women had difficulty having an orgasm, and 15% were unable to achieve orgasm under any circumstances at all. And what about with these happy and very happily married men? Well, interestingly, a third of these men had problems with premature ejaculation, which, by the way, wearing my sex therapy hat, is a very, very easy problem to resolve. Assuming, of course, that you are willing to acknowledge and address and take whatever steps are necessary to work out the particular problem. And what about erectile dysfunction? You know, we talk so much and we hear so much about Viagra and Cialis and Levitra. And again, one would think, but incorrectly, that men were doing really well in the bedroom when it came to their erections. But again, what we may fantasize is happening, in fact, is not the reality. And what this study found was that 52% of men between the ages of 40 and 70, that is a really, really high number, had problems with erectile dysfunction. And of course, with erectile dysfunction, I think that a lot of men believe that all they really need to do is go to their doctor or go to their urologist and just take a pill. And on the surface, that may seem like the right thing to do. But of course, one really needs to understand, why is it that the man is having difficulty achieving and maintaining an erection? And again, you may be surprised to find out that cardiac issues are very, very often at the root of the problem of many, many men, because it has to do with blood flow. So they have to find out what is going on or what is not going on, why there is not sufficient blood flow from the heart to the penis. So again, we all need coaches. And I think that people were a lot less reluctant to find out about what we should do with our money or what we should do with our gardens or what we should do with our makeup and our clothes. But when it comes to mental health, unfortunately, there is still a stigma, which is why, of course, I love to do the Ask Beattie show, because I'm hoping that there is going to be some little thing that I say every week where you will have an aha moment and somehow give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help when you're finding that the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships are not where you would like them to be. Well, before I introduce my two terrific guests, I'm going to play one of my most favorite songs, I Am Woman by Helen Reddy. And we are strong. And as women, we are invincible. And when you think about all the roles, so many different roles that women these days, of course, not just these days, are playing as wives, as professional women, as mothers. And my two terrific guests today, Arden Greenspan Goldberg. She is a nationally known family and marriage psychotherapist specializing in parenting, preteen, tween, teen, and young adult issues. She's been a featured expert on numerous national news and talk shows over the past 15 years, including MSNBC, CNN, The View, Maury Povich, Sally Jesse Raphael, and the list goes on. And she has a brand new book, which I have to tell you, I read over the weekend, which I absolutely, absolutely love. What do you expect? She's a teenager. And as an added bonus, we have
her daughter.
I'm so glad, Samara, that you were actually in town, because I know you are a tour guide and you go all over the world. So it really worked out well, because I think the daughter's perspective in all of this is really, really important. So thanks. Welcome, Samara. And you are a life coach, and you've done parenting workshops on curiosity and positive parenting. And this is interesting, too, that you collaborated with Mom in doing some workshops together. Mm-hmm. And what was that like?
Amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah, to share my role model with other people is it's amazing. People need to see that a mother-daughter relationship can actually be really healthy and really positive.
You know, and I think that's wonderful, because we so oftentimes hear of the difficulties and the tensions and the upsets. So
true.
It says a lot about you and Mom. And the book is the ultimate preparation manual and survival guide. I wish I had that before I had Jordana for mothers and tweens or tweens between the ages of tween girls, between the ages of 11 and 19.
Yes, it's comprehensive.
It is. And
when I wanted to write this book initially, my agent said we have to keep it to 13 to 19, and I said to her, this is more like 8 years old to 19, because little girls these days, and Samara can attest to this, you know, there's some 8-year-olds that are like teenagers, especially if they have an older sibling, an older female sibling, and mm-hmm. you know who I'm talking mm-hmm. about, mm-hmm. They're sophisticates
mm-hmm. yes.
and very exposed mm-hmm. via their sister, via the internet, and sometimes the kid sister, the younger sister, is just much more, I don't know, the radar is out there. So I wanted the book to be much more expansive. The compromise was 11 instead of starting at 8. They said, oh, that's ridiculous, 8. I said, no, you don't understand what it's like. Maybe you don't have little girls yet to really appreciate that they're very affected.
Very effective. In fact, you know, when you talk about 8 years old, my husband Jim is a sociologist, is a professor, and he was telling me how some of the younger little girls mm-hmm. of students, you know,
yes.
daughters of students, that they would come up to him and they wanted him to kiss them on the lips and they wanted him to hold them. Of course, one wonders what was going on in the family. And you see these young, little girls.
Yes.
They're so pseudo-sophisticated.
Yeah, pseudo-mature.
Mm-hmm. Pseudo-mature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was looking at some of the statistics, actually,
yes.
in your book. And I think that the audience really needs to hear this, that more than 30% of girls, that's nearly 1 in 3, becomes pregnant at least once before the age of 20. And in the United States, 1 in every 10 births involves a teen mother. Mm. 70% of teen girls who are sexually active say that they wish that they had waited. That's interesting. And nearly 63% of teens try alcohol before their 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. 41% before they reach the 8th grade. 8th grade! When I was in 8th grade growing up in Winnipeg, Canada, I mean, that was the last thing in the world that we ever...
Times have changed.
We used to go outside and play baseball with my dad. I mean, really, you know, and here you have these kids that are drinking.
It's not, you know, it's funny, Beatty, it's not every child. It's just, it's easy access and exposure mm-hmm. and children watch their older siblings. They watch their parents like hawks too. And
yes.
they imitate and copy behavior. They're like, you know, when they're really little, I have great nieces, and they're like little parakeets.
Yes.
They listen to what the mom says and the dad. They listen to what the older sibling says, and then you hear it in the language of a 3-year-old, but they're basically, you know, imitating the role models, which is a very important task for parents to walk and talk their talk, and not and to know that they're making a big impact, whether they think their children are listening or not. Children
they are.
Right, Samara?
Yeah, I'm here right now listening.
Oh, Samara.
And I'm almost 30, so yeah, I'm still listening.
Yeah.
Been listening since day one.
You're very wise. That you learned to listen, and that you had a mom who listened to you.
Absolutely.
Which is what this is really all about.
Listening in general, on both ends.
Exactly. And 62% of U.S. high school students attend a school where drugs are kept. And this was a number that really was, you know, so upsetting. As a mom, as I am, to hear that 80% of 15 to 17-year-olds have been exposed to hardcore porn on the internet multiple times. In fact, the average age a child is first exposed to internet pornography is just 11 years old.
That's correct.
Are the parents?
I think it's younger now, too.
I agree.
Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. All of these.
Yeah. The parents can be floating around sometimes, and I mean this, I don't mean this to put anyone down. Sometimes they're clueless and they don't really know how to navigate, and they're not appreciative of how easy access it is for their kids to see this stuff. Sometimes they're a little too trusting, and there's a very strong need to guide, to have these talks early on, these very uncomfortable talks, whether it's about sex, whether it's about porn, whether it's about, you know, with the online stuff, Beattie. I remember a 13-year-old, this was actually a client, whose the mother was telling me, I told my daughter more than once not to be talking to older people on the internet. And for some reason, she just keeps on doing it, and she's giving advice.
Why didn't the mother take away the internet? Why didn't she say enough is enough? You can't engage in talking with older people on the internet.
This is what's complicated about taking it away. I'm much more of continue to have those conversations, because I don't think that she realizes, 13-year-old, that she could have been talking to someone who's 40 years old on the other side. She didn't know. And she kept on doing this to the mother, like, oh, get away, this is impossible, and would sneak, and was the younger sister was the little sneak, and saying, do you know what she's doing now? Now, I like the mother, how she handled this, because what she did was, because I happened to be on the phone with her at the time, just, I have to go downstairs and talk to my daughter, but first what I need to do is compose myself, because I'm so angry right now, and if she hears me that kind of angry, she's not going to listen to me. And I said to her, look, she may not listen to you right now here, but she's hearing everything you say, so be as calm as you can. This is a potential for a transformative teaching moment. She is clueless. She has the brain of a very young teenager. She doesn't have the processing capacity. Her prefrontal cortex is not developed at this point where she can project, anticipate, prepare. She doesn't have that capacity. She's totally amygdala driven. And the amygdala is where all that emotional stuff is. And so when her mother would say, stop it, or I'm going to take this away from you, she got very mad. And eventually what she did was sneak around the mother. It's not that hard to do. So you want to continue to have these very important conversations, like lend your brain to your kid, because they truly don't know.
I actually remember, like I was saying, coming home from school and, you know, being like, something happened today. You know, there was a girl, she was being nasty to another girl or whatever it was. And what my mom would do, which I'm really grateful, my mom who we're with right now, would say, all right, well, you know, why don't you go do what you want to do in your room? And when you're ready to talk about it, you can come on downstairs.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
Oh, did I? Because I wanted someone to hear me. Yeah. And luckily, I don't know if everybody is as lucky to have, you know, a trained psychotherapist for their mother. But I guess the point is we want to be heard. I wanted to do it on my own time. So those words that were, go do what you need to do and come on down when you're ready to talk about it. If I'm not with a patient or a client, then I'm here for you.
And then, of course, there are many situations where the kids are not ready and they don't want to hear. And we try to engage and we try to explain.
Right.
And we say, look, there's a lot of danger. about talking to older people or talking to people on the internet. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're up to. And you have kids for, you know, regardless of the reasons, where they are not open to this kind of loving communication, problem solving, and interaction.
Well, you know how I see the difference? You know, parents talk about, I confronted my child and I said, you need to care front. It has to be with love. It has to come from a place of love that they feel that you're concerned about their health, their safety, their welfare, their happiness. It's be invitational, not confrontational. Be approachable. And the more that you practice that, the more your kid will eventually, and it takes a lot of faith, a lot of patience, practice patience, and you persevere on that no matter how frustrated you feel, no matter how you want to scream your bloody head off at your kid. It's like they'll close you off and roll their eyes up to the sky. And you'll miss that moment of connection. You'll miss that moment of concern. I'm really concerned about you. I'm scared what you're doing to yourself. This concerns me. You say it slowly. You don't overwhelm them. And then you give them the space.
Right.
And you give yourself the space as a mom and as a dad. Sometimes we need the breathing space to take care of our needs.
We sure do.
All the time, right?
We sure do.
You know, to re-nourish, recoup, regroup. Right. Also, sometimes we're not in the best, you know, 2 a.m, if your kid comes in drunk, you're not in the best mindset to, and you're tired and you're woken up out of a sleep because you heard doors bang and that sort of stuff. It's something that you need to table for the next day.
Right.
You don't talk to your kid when they're drunk. That is not going to, you're not going to get anywhere.
Sounds even like though, you know this from experience.
Well, you know, not just, well.
And clinical experience as well.
Exactly.
Of course.
Clinical experience. It's clinical experience as well.
It's true,
really funny about writing the book? Of course, you know, there's lots of references to Samara, and she's the inspiration for the book. And,
which I'm okay with.
Yeah, and it's so funny. I can't tell you. Gloria Steinem, I had some contact with her. She says, why didn't you write a book, Garden? What do you expect their teenagers? Why is it like a niche book, like just for mothers with daughters? And I said, well, if I wrote 12 books like you, I could say what I want to write. She says, you better do that for your next book then. She says, because don't neglect the boys out there and the dads. I said, no, look, there are instances in my book or situations that were dads and sons or mothers and sons. It's just that I had to kind of reconfigure the whole thing. But I learned so much from you and, of course, from Todd, your 36-year-old brother. And I found that the more patient I was, the more that I'd use my prefrontal cortex, that I would give myself the time to process and think, what's the best way to get through here? Certainly, it's not lecturing because they turn off. And if I was feeling slightly off, I knew that wasn't the moment to do it.
And I think that the reality, of course, is that we are going to lose it from time to time. And there's no perfect parenting.
No.
Manual that,
Our crowns are crooked. We're supposed to make mistakes as parents. We're supposed to make mistakes. We have to be appreciative that, especially teenagers, that's their middle names. Take another take. Their brain is not that kind of developed. When parents expect their child to think like they do on that kind of level, I have conversations about you're expecting too much of your kid. That's not age appropriate expectations. You're over here, they're over here in the understanding. That doesn't mean that you don't treat each other equally and with respect and kindness and compassion, except please don't expect them to get what you're talking about. Maybe they will get it a little better when they're in their mid-20s. And I get from parents, it takes that long? I'm like, well, you know, it's like a little inchworm. you know, it's like one little inch, one little step at a time, and you'll see the difference. I have parents that I work with. Don't you see the difference from when she was 12 to 14 and now to 16? Don't you see that she's able to sustain just a teeny bit more of contact with you as long as you don't lecture?
And I think, too, is that, you know, so many parents these days who sometimes are working two jobs, sometimes are single parents who are
tired.
Dealing with income inequality and racism and all kinds of societal issues. It's like they come home, and not only do they not have the skill as you do, as your mom did, for you,
right.
They're exhausted. Tired. They're overwhelmed. And I mean, I remember very well. You know, I would say to Jordana, listen, I really want you to do a couple of things. I want you to put the dishes in the dishwasher. And this is when she was age appropriate. I'd like you to please, you know, make your bed. And for whatever reasons, before we started the behavior mod chart that was on the fridge, you know, it was like, I can't, it's too late, it's too hard, it's too this. And I found that the talking and the understanding and the compassion, it only went so far. And she needed to earn the privilege to be able to go to some sort of an event at the end of the week. And I remember with the chart, and I remember with the numbers, and I remember with the gold stars, that was really so motivational that she realized that I was really serious. Mm. I was not just going to be loving and compassionate and the therapist, but I expected her to perform at a minimal level and take some, you know, family responsibility and be a member of the family and not just on the sort of receiving end of the family dynamic. Mm-hmm. She learned. I know that I sound probably really tough, and I wish in many ways that I'd been tougher.
Now, there's something about firmness. I remember, I mean, you had lots of learning issues in school, mm-hmm. and so we had tutors for you from the time you were in first grade, and Samara would pre-tutor coming, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want them to come. Mm-hmm. She would carry on something fierce. And I would just kind of like, in my head, do la-di-da-di-da-di-do, la-di-da-di-boo-di-boo, because I knew when the tutor came that this would be an entirely different little girl or young lady, because Samara had a stake in not embarrassing herself, very much like me. Mm-hmm. In that way, and her brother, very similar. We did not embarrass ourselves in public.
Right.
We just didn't do that. And that was a very strong role model on my end. And so when Donna came, I forget the one before that.
You sucked it up. Is that right?
Sure. Well, I like that you say something fierce, because it really does. It's very true. I mean, I'm a Leo, so the lion would come out, and it was like, you know what she would say when I would get very dramatic in this way? Because, again, I was not a perfect child. I had a lot of feelings and a lot of feelings to get out. And what she would say to me is, Samara, save it for the stage. And circa, right, let's go 10 years later, I was a musical theater major in college on stage all the time. That's how I got my emotions out.
Which was the perfect way, right?
It was.
For you, it was absolutely the perfect way.
Yep, and guess who guided me there? My mom.
Uh-huh. And you know something else I'm thinking of? Do you remember being at Khaki's? This was a clothing store. I don't know if you remember this. And she's trying on stuff. I was outside of the dressing room. I walked in. And there was a mother and daughter, and that daughter was carrying on something fierce. And you said to me, do you remember what you said to me?
I said, why is she doing that?
Right.
We're in public or something like that.
Right. And I said, well, you know the difference between you and her? And you were like, what? I said, she's self-entitled and you're not. You're appreciative of every little anything.
Sure.
And you're very thankful and you're grateful.
And you know
the difference where you could let your hair hang down at home. The home is the workshop. That's
right.
What I would say.
Very much
the
so.
Home is the workshop.
Right.
Outside of that, it's a different kind of practice. And you want to be your best self, not a phony baloney.
Right.
You be your authentic self, but you're learning to be much more civil out there, and because who you were, you noticed everything. How can she be like that?
Right.
I say, because she can, because her mother is overwhelmed. She doesn't know how to manage this, but perhaps this daughter is overindulged. You know, I wouldn't, and that's as far as it would go. I said, right. But you're nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So no worries.
Well, let me ask you something. When you were growing up, Arden, did you have the kind of mother that you sound like you were? Compassionate, understanding, empathic, emotional, that she took all the time to listen to her little girl's
maybe
feelings.
Maybe emotional.
And, oh, my mother. Grandma. Your grandma was emotional. My mother was a screamer.
Uh-huh.
I think I learned from my mother's mistakes. And I would say to myself, you'll be the opposite.
Uh-huh.
When you're a parent, uh-huh. Remember, opposites. This is even before dialectical behavior therapy, uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. Thinking in opposites, that kind of. I was like, you're not going to scream at your kids because mm-hmm. You know what it's like to be screamed at. It's awful. It's demeaning. You don't want to do that. My mother's not getting through to me like mm-hmm. this right now. Mm-hmm. She has no idea. She's just kind of lost it. I liked her when she was smart.
Uh-huh.
Grandma could be very smart. Grandma had like this, you know, wisdom piece, you know, when it was calm.
Totally. She still does.
Right. There was something, you know, and a part of my dedication book, she's one of the people that I dedicated to, you know, Ethel Levine, one smart woman. But she wasn't always so smart.
Uh-huh.
You know.
So you got to learn, I guess, from their mistakes.
Hopefully.
But overall.
You know, one of the things that I loved, although I love many, many things about the book, is that you talked about, and I underlined this in the book, that you talked about seeing the bigger picture, which mm-hmm. you call the aerial mm-hmm. view, and you talked yes. about aerial parenting.
Yes.
So let everybody know, what is aerial parenting?
Aerial parenting is, you know, when your daughter says something like, you've ruined my life, I hate you.
Ah.
How do you not take that personally, right? So the aerial perspective is about stepping back, rising above, seeing the bigger picture, and being curious about where is she coming from in the moment, developmentally, where is she coming from, you know? And the aim is, how do I diffuse this?
Right.
And it's a hard thing to diffuse when she's all like that and she's just attacked you. You know, that's a very hard thing. It is a hard thing, you know, when someone says, I hate you, you know, and runs away and closes. It's not just you.
This is any. Sorry.
No, Samara, this is not just you. This is any parent that I've ever worked with. This is the same stuff. So I said, you too could, you know, say I hate you too and get nowhere and get into a power struggle and it's going to get you nowhere. Or you could say to yourself, I need to get back to the love track and path, like the Beatles, All You Need Is Love. You need to remember that this was once a little baby. You need to change your mindset in the moment and say, this teenager is driving me up a tree right now. Right, but this teenager was once a baby, and this teenager right now feels terribly misunderstood. So what can I do about that? It's you know, it's leaning in. It's like what you say, too, about the curious. Be a curious parent. That takes some of the sting out of taking it personally. It's like, how curious you feel that way right now. How curious you think that way right now. Isn't this interesting? More like a journalist, more like a detective, you know, more like a writer, where you give yourself some breathing space. And if you're unable to do that, I would say leave the room.
Right.
Collect yourself right now. You know, let your daughter or whomever it is, let them have their little temper tantrum. That is not the time to get into it for whatever reason. I remember there were times that you would be particularly perturbed, Samara, when Todd would be, he could stay out later or stay up later, and you would carry on something fierce about that. It's not fair. And you would, I'd never put her in her room. I didn't take anything away. I didn't do anything like that. I was the conversationalist is what I was. So anyway, she marched herself up to the room, mm-hmm. banged the door loud. I mean, high drama. I'm like, oh, this is high drama. Let's see how long it takes her to get down. And so about 5 minutes later, because I knew who she was, she'd sit down. She'd say, Mommy, I'm so sorry. I said, so what was that all about? It's not fair. Why does he stay up later? I said, Samara, I know you don't understand that he's older than you, almost 7 years. I'll tell you what. How do you feel about, this is the grand negotiation here, how do you feel about 15 minutes? that you have an extra 15 minutes to stay up. And she was so young.
So let me just say something. Yes, let me just interrupt here, okay? Because I know that I'm sounding like the hardliner, and believe me, I'm not. But you know,
I work with hardline parents. Let me tell you something. This ain't easy.
I would interject. You know, I'm sorry you're having a really hard time. However, this kind of behavior is not acceptable. Mm. Okay, the limits, the boundaries.
I was a good actor.
You were a good actor.
I was a great actress.
But I think that we, as parents, we have to, even though we understand and there's compassion and there's developmental issues and brain issues and all of this kind of stuff, we have to be able to say, whether it's to our daughters, our sons, our spouses, our friends, enough is enough. You can't talk to me like that.
It depends.
It is not okay.
Can I share this with
you? Sure.
I had a very long fuse, and part of that was health, safety, welfare.
So patient.
But I had a very long fuse. But I will share this much, that there was a morning. See, Samara, you know, it's so funny. When she was young, she didn't have coffee in the morning to get herself up. And this is, you're young. This is like early teens. You were driving, maybe you were 16, you know, but it was early on.
Yep.
And you were hard to get up in the morning, and I eased, you know, it's funny, you mentioned this the other day, that I'd ease in and I'd say, hello, good morning, you know, whatever, because I knew she was a bear in the morning. And I remember the time that you weren't driving yet, so I was still driving you to school, and you were particularly, like, just at me. You were at me like crazy, and that's the breaking point.
Right.
I put the brake on the car.
Literally.
And I said, I've had enough of this.
Firm.
I said, firm.
She'd be firm.
I've had enough. My voice would go down a couple of octaves. I've had enough of this right now. You're so lucky to have a mother like me. Are you aware of some of your friends' mothers and how they are? Okay. And then I was mad. And then I continued drive. Drop her off at school. Now watch this. And she was mad. She'd slam the door. Wait, you hear this? And then I'd sit there because I knew
that I would come back.
Of course.
And apologize.
Of course.
Yeah, and you did.
I did.
Of course
I did, because I didn't like to leave situations negative. That's who I am from birth. I've always been happy, smiley, bubbly. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was highly emotional, fierce, as she said a couple of times. And it was the kind of thing where if I left a situation negative with my mom, that would ruin my whole day. And I wouldn't forget it. So there was something that she implanted in me. I don't know what, at a very young age, that don't leave a situation negatively.
Or angrily.
Or angry.
Right.
Any negative emotion, it's like,
don't go to sleep on that. And that
never
would be with my husband, too. This is marital, because I do marital work as well. I said, please don't ever go to sleep angry, because you're going to have the most restless, awful sleep. You'll make yourself sick to your stomach. And you don't always have closure. You know, like, there's still plenty of time to process, but at least there's an acknowledgement of, ooh, geez, I really overstepped my bounds here. So I would. But I wouldn't do it too much, because I felt that I'd be heard differently, that it would be occasional rather than some of my favorite patients all the time. They take it personal.
What I have found and over the years, and when I started off working after my postgraduate work at McGill, I began as a school social worker in the inner city school. And then a couple of years later, myself and two other colleagues, we ran the entire school social services program for hundreds and hundreds of schools in the English schools in Greater Montreal. And, I mean, I had worked with kids that were involved with B&Es and I mean, really tough kids. Mm-hmm. And, yes, the compassion and the love and the understanding, but I find, and what I have found over the years in working with families and adolescents, is that I think we've made a huge mistake in making our families into child-focused families. I think it's a really, really huge mistake, where the mothers have basically forgotten about self-care, the couples, God knows where the couples are, and it becomes a child-focused environment. And I feel that as parents, and we can debate all of this.
No, I agree with you.
I think it's a mistake where the kids have learned that it's all about them, where they're entitled,
where right. they run the show.
Yeah,
it's
much.
A mistake. Yeah. It is not. We're not giving our kids anything that's positive. We're not giving ourselves anything. I believe it's a really destructive and self-destructive dynamic.
Mm. Well, it's too much power.
Too much
you
power.
You don't want to
exactly.
super hyper empower your child, and you
right.
want them to see you taking care of yourself,
exactly,
making time for yourself, mm-hmm. tuning into yourself. You know, when I work with teens and young adults that have eating disorders, it's a hazard of the field for one or both parents to circle their life around their kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to them, please do not do that, because you're running yourself ragged, you're draining yourselves, and your kid sees that they have they're overpowering you.
Right.
You're not neglecting your child. You can't be a 24/7 cop and be over solicitous like that, because it's not working, and it's not making them it's not making them feel any more independent of you either.
It's harming the child.
Right. And
by giving them that kind of power.
And if there was anything that was inspiring to me as a kid and as now an adult child, it's watching my mom blossom and find new things that inspired her and made her a better person, and still continues to, as you know, as a very adult mom now. That's what has kept me excited and continues my iterations. As she says, I have many iterations. I mean, a woman who has been alive for so many years, a lot of people do this thing where they retire. Mm-hmm. I don't think my mom will ever want to do that, because
hopefully not.
No.
Ever. We'll never retire.
Right?
And you too, Bea.
No, right.
Never.
Why? We're not tired.
No.
So why
unthinkable.
Retire?
Unthinkable. Absolutely
right.
Unthinkable. But I want you to say a little bit more about this aerial parenting, where you're taking the bigger picture. You're looking at the bigger picture.
Right. Mm-hmm. So imagine yourself an eagle in an aerie, okay, high up, and you have your sweet little eaglets that are flying the nest, okay, and you're allowing them to separate, and you're kind of looking at them in the bigger picture. They're going to be babies at some point. They're toddlers, they're adolescents, they're young adults, and you kind of like see their lifeline, and you're here to be their North Star. You're here to help guide and facilitate their development. It's not about you. They pass through you. And I always say this with both my son and daughter. They miss me. They want to see me. It's not obligatory that they have to. And I think it has to do with my attitude about that. There's so much love. And I think when all is lost, and I would say this for any parent, when all is lost, resonate with how you felt about your baby. Not the sleepless nights, but when they're sleeping in their crib and the angels are flying around their head. That picture, take that inside, take that into your heart, and that will totally soften your heart.
She actually did a workshop where she had the parents bring pictures of their babies, like newborns. And it's like, when you get frustrated with your teenager and tweenager, look at that picture. Remember that they were once those little things, and they kind of still are. I mean, everybody's learning and growing no matter what age you are. There's still always, the brain is still forming. There's still a lot to learn.
No, for sure. And, you know, you look at all the issues. I mean, in your book, you know, you're talking about bullying and body image and drugs and alcohol and sex and stress and technology. And I added in divorce and dating and
the
school.
Family, absolutely.
I mean, God, it's just
But you have to expect, let's say with your daughter, that there's going to be pushbacks. The difference with daughters is they circle around. They come back. And what do I mean by that? It may appear as if, oh my God, she's totally pushing me out of her life right now. And I'm not talking about, stuff happens sometimes where mothers and daughters don't talk to each other for ages and years. And I'm not talking about that extreme. I'm talking more about in those teen years with the eyes rolling, etc. Because I work with those teenage girls. And they push back from their mothers, and I hate you. And the next thing you know, they're snuggling in bed with their moms. they circle around and back. The need to feel independent, to be an independent thinker, to be a free spirit is extremely important, not for us to douse that on the one hand. On the other hand, if they're doing too many drugs, if they're drinking, if they're overly promiscuous and we catch wind, or they're juuling, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, we need to deal with that. We don't need to avoid that. And we need to say things like, I would say this to Todd and Samara. They would go out for the evening, younger. Then I would say, have fun, but not too much, because I wasn't born yesterday.
Right.
You know, I understand. And I would also remember, you know, I still say it. Mm-hmm. Sure. I still say it. I mean, she's almost 30 and he's 36. I still say it because I feel it's about their, now I really feel it's about their safety in this world. You know,
health,
that just
safety,
be aware. Let's not get too tipsy, because there's some interesting people floating around that
dangerously
that mean to harm you.
Yes,
exactly.
Sure. Dangerous people.
Right. And as a traveler,
yes.
I mean, my brother as well, we both are very, we love to travel. But I mean, really, if your feet aren't on the ground and you are not feeling stable in another country, and you may have a drink or two, you could float away. I mean, literally.
Exactly.
But luckily, I had someone tell me, have fun, not too much. Mm-hmm. And that has served me my whole life.
Mm-hmm. No, I wish everybody could actually see the way the two of you look at each other, to actually visually look at this loving, warm interaction. And I'm sure that there have been a lot of times that it hasn't been so loving and the interaction hasn't been so great.
Sure.
I mean, it's with everybody.
Right.
I would
it's normal.
Say with you, that was short-lived.
Right. Like I said, I couldn't leave a negative situation too long.
And I couldn't either.
Mm-hmm.
So
it would hurt.
I have some clients that they don't talk to their daughters for 2 days. My heart be still.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, how do you do that?
Right.
What kind of, and I say, what were your teenage years like? Was one of your parents like that too?
Right.
And those kind of parents don't talk to me about that. They don't want it. I don't want to go there, because to what an effort it takes to talk for 2 days.
But yet sometimes you can do what you think is the best and what you think is all the right things.
Definitely.
And yet there are times that things just don't work out all that well.
Oh, sure.
And this is where I think that parents must not beat themselves up. I mean, hopefully if we are not sure what we're supposed to do, that maybe we can get some tools and get some help and see people like yourself and myself. But, you know, all the stories, they're not happily ever after stories. That's just the reality of things.
That's not being human. It's all life lessons.
Exactly.
It's all about why we're here. We're here to learn. We're here to make mistakes. And that's okay. That's why there's erasers on pencils. And I'd say also that as far as parents go, especially moms, the self-care piece of it is
critical,
essential.
It's critical.
Replenishing yourself, recouping, regrouping. I have a mom now goes for some weekends with her lady friends. This she was the pivotal person in this family. Nothing happened without her. Her husband, the two children, so deep, the dog, everyone dependent on her. And so she's come a long way. I've worked with her. You know, when someone lets me work with them, they'll come a long way. And so she has her ladies' nights now. She takes care of herself.
That's great.
She has her date nights with her husband. There was never anything like this before. So she understands what self-care is about. And her children now are seeing a different kind of role model. Because before, I mean, she would feel so much more angry and resentful, like she says, why does everyone think I'm a doormat? I said, well, you know, why do they
maybe
treat me like
a enabled it, but
I
maybe
said,
she
you're
enabled
letting
it
them.
Over the years.
You're encouraging it. You're inviting that.
Exactly.
You don't realize what you're doing here. I said, and when you're shipped, don't expect them to be so happy about it right away. They're going to give you a lot of guff. You know, just stay the course. You don't have to be liked. You need to take better care of yourself.
And look, no, you're absolutely right. And I mean, you look at what's happening with, you know, helicopter parenting, where they don't let the kids fall. They don't let the kids move. They don't let the kids do anything. They pay zillions of dollars, of course, I'm overstating it, you know, to universities and colleges where the kids are going to be able to get into these fancy schmancy, you know, institutions of learning where the kids haven't learned to fall and pick themselves up by themselves. And I mean,
good point, Beeb.
The harm that we are doing to our children. And, you know, when you talk about self-care, I mean, for years and years, I've said how important it is that the couple be at the top of the list of priorities, not the children, not the work, not the dogs.
Amen.
You know, really.
Amen.
And
yeah.
The kids need to understand, not when they're 20, but when they're three, that mommy and daddy need some time alone, that mommy needs to go and take a bath or take a shower
right.
with the door closed, and don't you dare come in. I don't care what's going on unless
right.
there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I mean, these are the kinds of things, the lessons that I think are so important, along with the compassion and the love and the communication and all of this, that children learn early, early on so that they can then develop and become
right.
independent,
right.
you know,
and
human
resilient.
Beings and resilient
yeah. right.
and know that they can
be curious.
And curious.
Yeah.
And that they can fall 1,000 times and that they have the power, because we've given you the power to be able to get up.
Right.
Not like so many of these kids that are so entitled and so privileged and they're depending on mom and dad to, you know, to sort of live their lives. And,
well, you want a legacy. I mean, I want a legacy of bright, compassionate, evolved people that
right.
bring their light to the world. And that are kind, but kind to the point of not being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that, that have their own limits and boundaries, but bring a very different approach to the world.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And I mean, it's really, really true to see between me and my brother that, you know, we're very free-spirited people. I mean, we will fly and fly and fly and have new experiences and always stay curious and try new things, yet feet are on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so imperative as a child, as a teenager, as an adult, as I continue to get older, to have that happy medium.
Absolutely.
You know?
You know, Arne, you must be so proud of her. I mean, I've just met you,
yeah.
Samara. I think you're terrific.
Thank you.
I really do. You sound solid.
Thank you.
You sound like you've got your stuff together.
You know, yes. I had a really good role model, and I still do.
Uh-huh.
Lucky me.
So when things are tough, if you've had a bad time at a party, you're not reluctant to pick up the phone and call mom?
Easily, always there for me, no matter what country I'm in, no matter what time zone I'm in, because I'm in all sorts of time zones.
Uh-huh. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, do you realize that the show is almost over, and I want people to read the book, What Do You Expect? She's a Teenager by Arden Greenspan Goldberg. It really is. As I said, I read it over the weekend, and I thought that there was just a real wealth of important information for all parents who are trying to navigate and to remain sane in dealing with their teenage daughters.
Right, and it ain't easy.
It ain't easy.
But it passes.
At all.
It's like this too shall pass. Mm. They don't stay teenagers forever, folks.
Nope.
It goes by. You know, one of the things that I say to my husband all the time and to my daughter, it's gone by so quickly. I can hardly believe it. Too fast. Way, way too fast. And the other thing I think that parents and children, if you're having any issues with your kids, is that, you know, time is moving along. And one of the greatest gifts that we can all give ourselves is to be willing to acknowledge, address, and try to resolve as best as we can issues from the past, issues from the present that are really getting in the way of our relationships with our children, with our daughters, with our partners. So listen, an hour is come and gone here on the Ask Beattie Show. I want to thank you so much for being here. It's really gone by fast. You've been great.
What a pleasure, Beattie. Thank you for having
absolutely
us on.